This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings and welcome back to the new and improved Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, Jim and Tom, the Galaxy Warriors. Like I said, we'd be back in our last episode, and we're back a week within itself. We're holding true to our promise. And this one's a fun episode because I think we've reviewed, I want to say chapter two of John Wick, but we're going to talk about like this whole gun-fu action subgenre.
Right.
That's existed for a very long time.
Yeah.
But really moved into the limelight in 2014 when John Wick came out. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about John Wick because San Diego Comic-Con passed a few weeks ago and they dropped Chapter 4, John Wick Chapter 4's trailer. And I'm excited about this one. This was supposed to come out this year alongside The Matrix. It was The Matrix and John Wick were coming out, I believe, in May of this year.
Yeah.
Then COVID obviously happened, so that got postponed. The Matrix didn't. Matrix came out. I think five people watched it.
Yeah, that was a rough one.
Yeah, it was a really rough one. And then they moved on.
Yeah.
But John Wick gets postponed, and they give us this trailer, and I want to know your thoughts on it, because I haven't talked this trailer with anybody. What did you think about it? Because I know you're a fan of the franchise.
It's hard to tell what's going on. Like, I know he's going to go fight the table and all that, but and, you know, he's training with Lawrence Fishburne. But it's hard to tell, like, I don't know what's going on or, you know, if there's other people involved in it and new people. But the biggest thing that I saw, which is very important to me, is the introduction of Donnie Yen, which I have no idea what his part is. But he looks great in it. The little bit that we do get of him, maybe a couple of seconds. But Donnie Yen's, you know, I think he's one of the greatest action stars of all time, especially after the Ip Man franchise. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited.
He gave me Stick vibes, like Daredevil.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, like, I'm going to turn on you real quick. But I'm going through the cast list, and it's nice to see Bill Skarsgård in there.
Yep.
Because he does play evil very well, and This is, I think, the first movie I've seen him in where he's evil and doesn't have prosthetics or is a voice actor.
Yeah.
But it looks like he's going to be the head of the table in Paris.
Yeah.
Which, have you ever been to Paris?
No.
Don't go.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not, like, it's not, there's a lot of places on my, like, have to go to list. And actually, that's not, like, Paris is not. France kind of is. Not all France, and maybe not any of France, but...
But like Normandy, Versailles, stuff like that. The other big cities in France that people forget about. I'll tell you this, man, and no offense to our Parisian listeners, but this is just based off of a one-day experience in your city. I hated it. I took the tube from London to Paris. It was about 3 hours because there's a time difference between the countries, and I didn't realize that. I got out, and it smelled like New York City.
Ugh. Oh.
So the people of New York that listen know that smell. It's urine.
Yeah.
It's a pissy smell. And that's what Paris smelled like when I got out of the train station. Now, I gave it the benefit of the doubt because it's a train station. When I stepped on the streets of Paris, the smell was intensified.
And don't they have, like, free public bathrooms there?
Public bathrooms, and they have public water. They have a really cool public water system that once you watch the Zac Efron Down to Earth series, you'll see this. Another plug. That's going to be our ongoing plug for this entire season of Galaxy Wars. But they have so many, like, different services for the public, right? I got out there, and it wasn't like New York where the people are, like, super, like, in your face and loud.
Yeah.
It was, like, passive-aggressive, like, get out of my way. I hate you, Americans. We got into an Uber. We were going to Disneyland Paris, and our driver was completely out of his mind, but the drivers there are out of their minds, and right. everybody between bikes and scooters are interweaving each other. I was having a panic attack in the front seat of this guy's Mercedes, but I don't ever want to go back. I looked at it and I chalked it up and I said, all right, I've been to Paris. That's it. Versailles, all that stuff I'm here for. But the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre, all that stuff, I don't care for it. It wasn't for me. But back to this, that Bill Skarsgård in Paris made me remember my time in Paris. But also our boy Hiroki Sonata's in this as well.
Yeah.
I think a badass.
Yeah, he's in everything he's ever been in. He's great. So I'm excited for him. Scott Atkins, which
you know who he plays Killa.
Yeah, I don't even know what that is. But he's named, and Clancy Brown shows up, and he's missing a finger. Makes me think he's the one guy that got through. You know what I mean? Like maybe.
Yep.
But yeah, there's a lot of like intrigue and. They packed, I mean, it's a short trailer, it's a minute, which when I looked at it, I was like, that's weird. But they do pack a lot into a minute of a, and you know, if you're a fan and you've already watched, then you already know, like, okay, well, you know, John lost his finger to come home. So when you see Clancy Brown missing it, you're like, you put two and two together and you think Clancy Brown might have, you know, lost hit, like was able to come back into the company or whatever this thing is. And then, you know, you see Donnie Yen and with the glasses on, you don't know what's going on there. And then you said you see Bill Skarsgård. And so there's a lot. And they like, they do fit a lot in that 60 seconds. And you start to wonder what's going on. But
exactly. And you see the dogs too, those German, those Dobermans. So maybe Halle Berry shows up in here and we weren't, you know, we're just putting two and two together, but maybe she pops back up. Yeah. This was one of those things that going into chapter four, I was like, I was a little leery because we talked about Fast and the Furious last week.
Yeah.
And how it just gets more ridiculous as it goes.
Yeah.
John Wick has kind of stayed the course. They've just upped the ante with more assassins and more threats. But then I read that there's a potential for John Wick in space. And then I was like, oh, I don't want this.
Yeah.
Like, don't ruin the franchise. No, not everybody needs to go to space.
No.
I don't need, you know, the Continental having a satellite and John Wick has to take, you know, a rocket up there or, you know, he's on Richard Branson's ship to go up there. Like, I don't want that. And something that's kind of... that was in like the back of my mind was that Derek Kolstad dropped working with Chad Stahelski on this series. And John Wick is based off of the character that Kolstad made.
Right.
But they look like, based on this, they just copied the template. And I was worried that Chad would be like, oh, the new writers are going to get it right and it'd be super far out and trippy. But the visuals are still there. The theme still seems the same. So I'm very excited for this movie.
Yeah. So am I. Well, so, obviously, I was going to be, but yeah, so am I.
Yeah, and I, you know, if anybody's listening from the John Wick franchise, do not send that man into space. don't ruin what's already perfect. And I feel like the good thing about John Wick is he kind of ushered, this series ushered in this gun-fu subculture that we've been talking about for a very long time, probably since John Wick Chapter 2. And the beauty about this is not only did it usher in the gun-fu culture or reintroduce the gun-fu culture, but it also it introduced Keanu Reeves to a new generation of movie watchers.
Right.
Because there's our generation who knows him, Point Break, Matrix, and so on.
Bill and Ted.
Yeah. And the people who are now true John Wick fans are like, wow, Keanu Reeves is great. I love him in this. What else has he been in? And then they get to go back through his catalog and see some really good movies like Speed and The Matrix and all these other Bill and Ted, all these other good movies. But it still stayed true to the man that we know and love. So I was very, very pumped with that.
It's weird with Keanu Reeves is everybody says he can't act, which whatever. Or, you know, he's kind of one dimensional and he's a surfer kid, whatever. But he's... like, he's been in a lot of, like, really genre-defining, like, movies. Like at the Bill and Ted is kind of like you know, a classic stoner kind of like, you know, quotable movie. But then like everybody has seen Point Break, and that like kind of defined like the young kids and you know, or you know, like the young FBI agent kind of motif. And then that he does the Matrix, and he redefines, you know, science fiction slash action movies. And then John, you know, there's other stuff in between, but like John Wick is kind of defined a genre for the last everything that they make that has, you know, everything. If there's like a pre John Wick and a post John Wick, everything pre John Wick, it's not all that great. Everything post, they had to all up their game. Like everybody had to do their own stunts, had to do it like extensive training. You can't just get by with quick cuts and shoddy, you know, lighting. It's like you, now you have to tell like a visual story, and your actor has to be a well-trained athlete and put time in, or else it just, you're never going to meet the bar that John Wick set. Like, and everybody gets compared to it.
And the continuous shots, like, you know how they're doing like a shot, like a 45 minute shot or whatever. I know that's a weird number to throw out there, but like they're doing shot, long shots on their sets. So I think that that's also a point that John Wick has kind of, the attention to detail has been there as well.
Yeah. And while that's like when he did the Matrix, they, you know, everything after that was compared to the Matrix, you know, you know, it's a decent movie, but it's no Matrix. Or and even Point Break, it was the same thing. A lot of stuff like Point Break started coming out after Point Break. So, you know, say what you want about his acting style or how he's one note and, you know, no inflection or whatever, and he doesn't talk much. But whatever he's doing has been working for 35 years or whatever he's been doing in the business. And it's, you know, he's had some duds, sure, everybody has, but like you can't say he hasn't left his mark on cinema. Like he has defined genre a couple different times, and I think he's doing it all over again.
And the cool thing is it's with multiple creative teams. It's not like he's just specifically working with the Coens and that's it. He's working with everybody else. And Chad Stahelski, you know, he was a stuntman. And now he's got, you know, three of the best action movies of the 2010s. And 20s, you know. So there's a lot of Keanu praise that is finally coming to fruition. And I know, like,
you also got to think, like, Point Break is one of Kathryn Bigelow's first movies, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, she's a new director on the scene and gets, you know, a couple of these hot young actors and Swayze and Reeves and, of course, Gary Busey. And then, you know, then The Matrix comes out and the Wachowski sisters, they're like, they're almost brand new. I don't know. I don't think they had... They had a few things before, but nothing like The Matrix. So, I mean, the two of them took a gamble on Keanu, and Keanu, you know, delivered. And now you get, you know, Stahelski, or, yeah, I think that's right. That's Stahelski and John Wick.
Yep.
And he's, you know, you're like, he comes right from being his stunt double to directing him in, like, you know, like, we can't say it enough, and it's getting repetitive, but a genre-defying movie or group of movies. So, I mean, John Wick sticks his head out, and it always, he always delivers. And like with these unknowns and these unknown directors and writers. So,
yeah. And what I'm really looking forward to is he had always said he was never going to do TV, and it just came out that he's going to be doing a series on Hulu called The Devil in the White City about the 1938 World's Fair and the construction of that while H.H. Holmes is doing his thing.
Yeah.
So I'm very interested in that. 8 episode count. That should be amazing. And that's with a fairly unrecognizable director, Todd Field. You know, his biggest thing was he was a camera operator for little children.
Oh, really?
In 2006. So, again, another unknown with Reeves. And I think that that's another thing. Like, the directors are taking chances on Reeves, but Reeves is also taking the chance on the director. So, you know, we're going to give Keanu his flowers every day, day we possibly can. This could be a Keanu podcast. And he was in the new DC Super Pets movie, and everybody gave him praise for his Batman. And since DC is doing what DC does, there's an option for a new Batman potentially. And if I'm going to say it, give it to Keanu at this point. But let's talk Gun Fu.
Yeah.
Since John Wick, you're right. There has been a lot of movies that have been compared to John Wick. And some of those movies, I've made a list just so I can remember some of them. Nobody. Obviously, that's a Derek Colstead joint who started John Wick, but very John Wick.
Yeah.
In terms of everything. Then you have Atomic Blonde, Proud Mary, the movie Jolt with Kate Beckinsale, Lucy.
Jolt is, isn't she a bail bondsman or something?
Yeah.
With like powers or something like that, or.
Yeah. And an anger management issues.
I didn't see that. So
I wouldn't recommend it. But then we got Lucy, Red Sparrow, Extraction, Anna, Ava, The Old Guard, Hotel Artemis, which was essentially the Continental, just as a hotel. The Man from Toronto, which tried to be John Wick, but they had Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson turn it into a comedy.
Right.
It was a fun little comedy. And then you get...
Yeah, I didn't... I just saw that pop up, but I've never seen it in that... I don't know, maybe I'll eventually.
Yeah, if you got an hour and a half to waste, it's not bad. Right. It's stupid funny. That's the only thing I could say about it. But then you get a movie that comes out, like Bullet Train, which is very gun-fu-y as well. So in terms of the genre now, what are you like, how do you feel about the gun fu genre? Do you think that we're getting too many of these assassin based movies that are comparable to John Wick, kind of like we were getting with the superhero movies, like Madam Web gets a movie, and you know, Spider-Ham gets a movie, and Zatanna's gonna get her own movie?
Yeah, there's, I mean, obviously some of it's very derivative and not great. The whole point of the genre is you don't know what to expect. You didn't know before you watched John Wick, you didn't know it was going to be that. Like, nobody was really talking about it. You have to like squash your desire to be like, that's going to be dumb, you know, because I've been surprised by a lot of them. Nobody is a big one. That's probably the biggest one on there. But even like, what's the one with, not Atomic Blonde, the other one she was in?
The Old Guard?
Yeah, that was a good one.
I think that one is a little bit different.
It's a very superhero-y.
Because it's based, there was source material for it, you know? Like, Proud Mary had its moments, but does it hold up to John Wick? Probably not. And that was the year, like, Atomic Blonde came out, then they did Red Sparrow, and then Proud Mary, like all within the same year or so.
And
all of them.
I don't know if you mentioned the one that what's her face was in, the redhead,
Jessica Chastain.
Gamora.
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan was in one. Milkshake.
Gunpowder Milkshake.
That was actually, I thought that one was actually pretty good too. That's probably in my most watchable ones. But yeah, they're all kind of derivative, or what they do steal, like Nobody steals a little bit, and it's almost like, how can they not? But like, he's you know, a different kind of character, and you learn more about his past. But I kind of like the idea of not knowing who any of these people are, and the ones that tell you too much are the ones that I think stray too far from why John Wick's good. The mystery of who John Wick is, and them only giving you like a clue a movie, is kind of why I like John Wick and the whole thing. Like, I don't need to know everything about him. I like, you know, of course we like coming up with our own theories and following, you know, information down rabbit holes, but the ones that get in too deep and try too hard, and, you know, there's also ones that do like quick cuts and really don't understand what made it good,
in some of those, like, the stunt coordination is terrible.
Yeah.
And I think what separates John Wick, and this isn't a John Wick episode, because we are going to be talking about the Gray Man after we're done our Gun Fu breakdown as we enter that galaxy. But John Wick was directed by a former stuntman, so the emphasis is on making it look practical, making it look believable, where some of these other ones just kind of went over the top.
Yeah.
You'll see it if you watch The Man from Toronto, you'll see it. But I don't think that was designed to be like, this is Kevin Hart and Woody Harrelson as John Wick. That's not the intention I got from that movie, but it was like, let's give this mysterious, shrouded figure a breadcrumb origin story. But that's about it. You know, nobody felt like it could be put right into the John Wick universe.
Mm-hmm.
Atomic Blonde was probably the best one of those in terms of what you were talking about, of kind of being shocked or being led to believe one thing and then coming out with another thing. Because I thought the movie, honestly, was a present-day movie, not a movie about the Berlin Wall. So going into it, I was like, this looks great. Coming out of it, I thought I was disappointed with it because it wasn't what I expected. Now, I've watched it another time since then, and I appreciate it much more the second watch through than the first one. But it's kind of like John Wick kind of reminds me of when Taken came out.
Yeah.
Where it was a resurgence for another older actor with Liam Neeson. And that movie kind of has the gun-fu vibes, where it's not Michael Bay action, not Fast and the Furious action, not superhero action. It was more hands-on, believable stuff.
Right.
But then Taken kind of turned into this whole Liam Neeson universe.
Yeah.
Where he was Taken, then he's fighting wolves, and then he's the marksman, and he's on a plane and a train and automobiles, and he was doing everything.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that was Liam Neeson going through a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
Instead of buying a Corvette, he was like, let me see how many vehicles I can be taken in.
Well, that was the thing. I think for him, because, I mean, Liam Neeson's a great actor. Was a great actor. I don't know.
Schindler's List. He's a great actor.
But, you know, I think around that time, they started talking about how he, you know, said he used to just walk around on the streets and punch black people or something crazy like that.
Yeah, in Belfast. Yeah, he was a tyrant.
And it was getting close to him to being canceled, so I feel like he was like, let me do all the goddamn movies that they're willing to give me until I get canceled. And he just never got canceled. He was just like, you know, like, all right, well, you know, he said, I'm sorry, I'm not like that anymore. And he still kept getting work. And then now he has like 30 movies that are all exactly the same. So it's, you know, John Wick is, well, Keanu Reeves has done just John Wick, and, you know, we'll see if anybody else, you know, reprises a role. Everyone else seems to do, you know, it's a single movie. And John Wick kind of felt like it was going to be a single movie, and it would have been fine, because you think to yourself, oh, it can't get better. You know, they can't, they can't up themselves. And then each time they actually do a lot to up themselves, and they are each better than the other. So, you know, that doesn't happen all the time, or that often at all.
Yeah, and, you know, the first Taken movie, I enjoyed. I thought that was good. And I think that was the moment when Hollywood realized older actors and actresses can do action movies with practical stunts.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a smart move, because how many times can Tom Holland get cast as an assassin, or Taron Egerton, or one of the Chrises? you know, there's it revolutionized the action hero to the point that for the most part Bruce Willis has a career still, other than having a debilitating illness, but he still has a career, and Mel Gibson still has a career.
Yeah.
And Stallone is making his own superhero movies. So had it not been for Taken's success, I don't know if John Wick would have been a property that would have been brought to... Right.
Yeah. You could say...
this whole universe.
Taken's definitely the predecessor, or the movie that, you know, got people thinking, you know, why can't we do it? And I'm sure, although Taken is the movie that got everybody here, the fact that Stahelski worked with Reeves as much as he did, I'm sure he probably always had Reeves in his mind, but was thinking, I can only get this done if I, cherry pick a Marvel actor. But I think that would have ruined it. Like, if we had some, you know, Diesel Marvel actor involved in it.
Yeah, it would have been Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with it, because at one point, and you know this, and all of our listeners know, the same guy or girl was getting cast for everything. And now, in terms of the gung-fu genre, it's an open game. It's open season for anybody. Who would have thought Bill Skarsgård would be cast as an assassin? But here we are.
Yeah.
You know, who would have thought Karen Gillan cast as an assassin? Or, you know, Saoirse Ronan when Hannah came out. When Hannah came out, Saoirse Ronan was a nobody.
Yeah.
Now she's winning Academy Awards and being nominated alongside Meryl Streep and Glenn Close and all these actresses. So the action genre has come a long way. And it brings us to a movie that came out on Netflix that we talked about before our hiatus. And I remember the tweet. You tweeted me the casting of Ryan Gosling and Chris Evans together and said, are you going to be able to control yourself? And at first I thought it was going direct to theaters. And I was like, well, you know how 50 Shades of Grey, the theaters were flooded. That's what it's going to be like when I go see this movie.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about The Gray Man and we're going to spoil it. So if you haven't watched it on Netflix, tune out now. You've already got half hour of great content.
Yeah.
And then come back after you watch The Gray Man. But The Gray Man was surprisingly, and I say surprisingly because critically, a lot of people, not even critically, like a lot of people were split on it. I think it's sitting at like the mid-50s on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And a lot of people that I know who have seen it are like, it is what it is. When I walked away from that movie, I was like, give me a Gray Man universe. And I know you had said you've read the book series.
Yeah, I not all of them. I think I read three of them. And
so, did you read The Gray Man?
Yeah, it's the very first one.
Okay.
It's the inner. This story follows the first book pretty well. Okay. There's obviously some stray, points where it strays. And I actually read The Gray Man like a couple years ago, because it's in my... spy dramas are kind of my, like, in one of my, readable genres. Like, I like Bourne, and Reacher. But Reacher's not a spy. He's just, I don't know. He's like a loner. But
6'5" hunk of a badass.
Yeah.
In Amazon's universe right now.
So, yeah, and they're not alike. I mean, the stories are not alike, but I mean, I guess there's, some comparisons to Reacher and The Gray Man. But in the only things I will say is the reason he's called The Gray Man and the reason it is a gray man is the gray men and a gray man is somebody that's not, you're never supposed to see them. You're they blend into the background.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling with his shirt off is not blending into the background.
Certainly didn't blend in.
No. It's going to be tough for him to blend in. So he's not necessarily, and I think lines in the first book, they tell you what he looks like. He's not muscular. He's not particularly tall. He's not short. You know, he's not fat. He's not thin. He's just, he blends in and you would never know who he is. And that's the whole point of the gray man. That's how he gets into the places he gets into. And it, the gray man's like a term for like a deep operative in the CIA. So.
Yeah. And we kind of got that.
Yeah.
In exposition through Billy Bob Thornton discussing the options for Six's contract. And even just before seeing the movie, when I saw the cast with Ryan Gosling, Chris Evans, Ana de Armas, and Billy Bob Thornton, I was like, I'm in. Then the Russo brothers were named the directors, and I was like, I'm definitely in. But then I just like kept seeing the cast getting at it with Jessica Henwick and Danush and Alfre Woodard,
yeah,
Reggie Jean-Page, and Callum Mulvey, who was... He's been in D.C. He was in The Winter Soldier. He was Rumlow's secondhand man. And then he was in... Was it Justice League? Yeah, he was in Justice League. And I believe he was KG Beast. He was the one who killed Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, okay.
So he was the one... He was Dining Car. He was the guy who was the other operative who gets killed in the field. And I was completely happy with that. Like, I was like, this is going to be a great movie. And when I watched it, I'm like... This is a fun movie. This was cut and dry. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. They didn't get too ballsy and creative.
Right.
And it kind of felt like a sequel to The Winter Soldier, minus all the costumes.
Yeah.
You know, there were definitely Winter Soldier vibes in there. And it makes sense because of the Russos directing it. But it's been a while since I've seen Ryan Gosling do an action movie.
Right.
Especially one that's not like panned towards the critics. This was just like a fun action movie with a fantastic cast, and Ryan Gosling gets to get jacked again and he gets to remind people that he's a handsome devil and gets prepped for, you know, what's potentially going to be an awful movie, Barbie. So this is a movie that's going to leave a better taste in your mouth than the Barbie movie would. And then you throw in my boy, Chris,
yeah,
as a bad guy.
And he goes full camp. I mean, like, I think he made this movie. Like, I think he's the best part of it.
I agree. Lloyd was my favorite character.
Yeah, but Lloyd is a incredible, campy villain that I think he had a good time playing.
Yeah, and it looks like he's doing everything he possibly can to separate him from Captain America. Even though he has said in interviews and stuff, like, I love that character. I would take that role over and over again. But he's just showing his range. He's not the guy from Not Another Teen Movie that everybody thought he was, you know?
And the last two movies that I've seen him in, well, maybe I've seen him in other things. I'm just not. But I mean, this one in Knives Out, he's a huge douchebag.
Yeah.
And in this, he's like, you know, psychopath and sadistic. But he doesn't really play that. He's more just douchey than he is a psychopath.
I feel like you just give him a mustache and he just becomes a whole different person.
Yeah.
Like, because he had a mustache in Knives Out too, right?
Yeah, I think he did.
Or his Broadway show. One of these shows, he had a mustache, but. He definitely did make the movie, even like through his methods of torture, but like his over the top campiness, like you said, his ruthlessness, like he wasn't redeemable. You didn't want him to win. You wanted him to die. You were happy when his hands blew up, but you also loved him when Jessica Henwick's like, why are you walking like that? And he's like, I got shot in the ass, Suzanne. And it just makes, like, the way the Russos make a movie and they factor in, like, the action is bar none. I thought the action was fantastic. The dialogue, there's not a ton of exposition.
No.
I think Anthony Russo needs to put himself in all the movies, or Joe Russo. I can't remember which one was in it.
You know, and I don't even know.
It was Joe. He was one of, like, the CIA operative guys. They put him in there. But then... they kept the twist, and I thought that was great. Like, when Danush found out that it was, like Lloyd was a scumbag.
Yeah.
And he just was like, here, take it, get out of here and do what you have to do. And this movie, like, for a movie about assassins and psychopaths, it had heart. You know, because of Billy Bob's niece, and like, it really did have heart. Did you like the action, the dialogue, all that stuff?
In the action, and this is something we said before, the only thing I think they could have done with is it was just a little too many cuts for me, which is very, it's very, like, different from the Russos than you usually get. Usually they are more cognizant of just slowing things down and, you know, getting the best out of, like, every shot, and they don't really do that. They don't fall for that whole, you know, cut. Because they could, I mean, it's a $200 million budget. They could, you know, spend time on it. So I would have shaved, would have just less cuts and slowed some of the action down to, like, so we could really see it. And, but yeah, I think they had a lot of cool chase scenes, I thought. Which, you know.
The scene where they blow up Alfre Woodard's house.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was that was a great moment in the. In the movie.
Yeah.
Or the time, not the Times Square, but where were they? In Moscow?
In the, the, and he's killing people, which, what I think was a cool thing they did was they took all the sound out and he's killing people like silently.
Yeah.
With while like fireworks and going off and whatever.
Even like they would use like the flashbangs and it would take sixes. Like it happened in the beginning in the hotel party where they threw a flashbang and he was too close to it and he lost his hearing was distorted and you saw the action unfold, but it was always like that tinnitus kind of ringing in your ear. And then they did it again in that square scene. I thought that was great. And Six is handcuffed and still trying to be a badass. And I thought that was a really cool moment.
Yeah, and they pointed out, like, you know, can you kill this guy that's handcuffed to the park bench?
Right. There was, like, stormtroopers. I honestly, like, when I saw this, like, first and foremost, I love Ana de Armas.
Yeah.
How can you not? For many reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But this movie is what I expected her role to be like in James Bond.
Right, yeah. Instead of,
She was just in a dress for 10 minutes and that was it. They gave her enough time in this and built the character up for the sequel.
Yeah. And she could she's super, well, she's obviously very attractive, but she's actually really talented too. Like,
yeah,
I think we get wrapped up in the fact that, you know, how attractive she is and they kind of pigeonhole her in some roles, but you know, she taught herself English and she's been in, like, when she gets a chance, she always delivers. Like, I don't think there's been anything where she hasn't, like, did the best that she could. Like, Knives Out, I think, was a great example of what she could do. So,
yeah, and she kind of knows who she wants to work with, right? So her first American movie, like the introduction to Ana de Armas, was in Knock Knock with who? Keanu Reeves.
Yep.
Then she does another movie in 2016 with Keanu called Exposed. Not very good. She does the War Dogs movie with Miles Teller and Jonah Hill, which it's kind of not bad.
Yeah.
Did an Overdrive movie with Scott Eastwood. I think she was just in it because she was hot. They wanted two hot people in it. But then it went smaller roles, right? She was in Blade Runner for a cup of coffee. Then she was in The Informer. But then she was like, I want to work with Chris Evans now, so I'm doing Knives Out. And that relationship kind of stood the test, and now they're doing this.
Yeah.
And then she's going on and playing Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, and she looks right as Marilyn Monroe, you know, in the picture or the stills that we've seen. It's amazing how good she turned out.
Right, and she's doing another movie with Chris Evans and Adrian Brody called Ghost It that's being worked on. And not to mention, it's crazy how this kind of played out. And I didn't even picture it until just now. It didn't hit me when I was kind of forming this episode. She's rumored to be the cast or the lead in the John Wick, the ballerina spinoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So look at that, man. Start with John Wick, yeah, and kind of wrap up with John Wick. Like, it's crazy. Like, somebody of her talent to have a cup of coffee in the James Bond movie where they could have used her more.
Yeah. Or better.
Yeah. Especially coming off of Knives Out. I feel like this movie, like, totally redeemed her. And not to mention, like, I think a lot of people forgot Ryan Gosling's a pretty good actor. You don't like Ryan Gosling,
no,
do you?
I don't like Ryan Gosling. How many words did he say in this? Three?
It's divided by three.
All right.
It may have been nine.
I think about, what's the other, was it Driven?
Or Drive.
Drive. He doesn't talk in Drive.
And then, I love that movie, though.
In Notebook, he barely talks. In this, he barely talks. Like,
in La La Land, he sings.
Oh, perfect. I didn't see that.
Right. Crazy Stupid Love, he talks a lot.
I didn't see that one. Not going in.
Oh,
but
you have to see that one. That is such a good rom-com.
Okay. But
I saw it four times in theaters, Tom.
All right. That's great. That's great.
Listen, let's go back to our last episode where you said you were having a midlife crisis.
Yeah, I know.
You need to watch Crazy Stupid Love because it's about a man having a midlife crisis, right, and Ryan Gosling's hunky ass comes over and saves him.
All right. I'll watch it for like a minute, maybe.
I can be your Ryan Gosling.
I'm just saying, like, I guess he's all right. An all right actor. I think I don't know what makes people think he's better than he actually is.
Because he's a handsome devil.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You know, and that's fine. It's fine. It's fine. He is. But I don't think he's like as good as everybody else says. I think he's, like you said, he's handsome, and that's gotten him in a lot of different roles. But I don't remember him like doing a lot of different things in those roles, you know?
Yeah. But what I forgot to say was, with Ana de Armas, she worked with Ryan Gosling on Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, yeah,
so
true.
Whether it's strategic on her part or whether it's just strategic on these directors, she knows who she's comfortable with and has chemistry with.
Well, that's also, you know, if you think about it and you look back, we're just talking about a group of actors that are hot, not in the literal sense, but in like the metaphorical. They're just like, they're impressive, and everybody wants them to be in their movies. Yeah. You know, people say the Rat Pack, but it's kind of like that. These are groups of actors that work with each other and, you said, are comfortable, but they're always going to be mentioned because they kind of cream rises to the top. Like, okay, well, yeah, you could ask these guys to deliver. And, you know, as long as you don't put a ton of, you know, conversation, Ryan Gosling's going to deliver. So
I never in my wildest dreams, and I've had dreams that these three were in movies together, but I never thought that they would be in a movie together. I never thought it was going to happen. And it may seem like at least Six and Danny are going to be in another movie, the Gray Man sequel, which was announced that it's being worked on. But the thing about Ryan Gosling, and then we'll kind of talk about our favorite moments in this movie or what it could have benefited more of. I feel like he takes some weird roles.
Occasionally, yeah.
And the one I'm thinking about right now is based on what his movies in the pipeline look like. He's got The Wolfman coming out where he plays the Wolfman.
Right.
He's got a movie called The Fall Guy, which is an action movie. He's got another movie called The Actor that deals with 1950s Ohio. But then he's got Barbie. And I've seen the stills. I know the universe has seen the stills.
But I keep wondering, who's it for? Is that four kids, or is this going to be like an adult like comedy about the Barbie? You know what I mean? Like, or is it
this movie? This movie should say TikTok exclusive. Because that's what it sounds like. It sounds like this movie is made directly for TikTok. And they got two Academy Award winning actors in this. Did you see any of the leaked footage?
No, just them roller skating.
Oh my God, that's all I need. That's all you need to see.
Yeah.
That looked so awful. And I'm just like, get this movie.
See, that's the thing. I don't think it looks awful. I think it's the right casting for the movie, or, you know, like
the right recasting, because that's not who Barbie was supposed to be. It was supposed to be Amy Schumer. Yeah. And what movie was that one for? Who was that for? Yeah,
I mean, let's be fair. I mean, it's not
like
that's not an accurate portrayal of Barbie.
No, and I don't think, personally, I don't care what she looks like or anything. I don't think Amy Schumer is a good actress.
Oh, yeah.
At all.
Well, what is your range got to be in Barbie? I mean,
I think they just wanted a blonde actress, and she did it. And, like, that's not her brand. That doesn't strike me as anything that she would have ever done. And what I've seen her in, I was like, Trainwreck. The best part of Trainwreck was John Cena being compared to Mark Wahlberg in a movie theater. So, Amy Schumer, she would never be on my list for any castings, to be honest with you, because I don't find her funny. But that Barbie movie, I hope it's rated PG-13 and it's just a satire.
Yeah, that's what I think it's going to, well.
Our toy worship.
We get this, that's kind of what I'm, but then again, if they do that, girls are going to want to see it. Boys and girls are going to really want to see it. And if it's not, if you put up a big Barbie coming to theater soon, a cardboard cutout in a movie theater, and Toots walks by, and even though Toots is not a big Barbie doll collector, she knows who Barbie is.
Yeah.
Kids are going to want to see it. But if it's a satire of toy collecting or whatever, then I don't know if that's the right direction to go either. Like, Barbie's one of those things that if you can't make it for anybody, like would I have liked a dirty, gritty, G.I. Joe? Sure. But kids are going to go see it. Like, they're going to want to see it. And it's hard to tell, a 7-year-old, you can't see it because it's not made for you. Well, you buy me these toys. What do you mean the movie's not made for me? So it's kind of a very weird line to walk across, but
I feel like this is gonna be like Barbie comes out of the box and becomes a real girl, and it's just like pushes the boundaries of who you can be. Like Greta Gerwig's doing it, she's got a lot of feminist undertones to her movies, and this is a great movie to be a feminist stance, because Barbie's been overly sexualized and hasn't been, accurate of all women. So maybe that's a good moment for her. But, I'm looking at the cast of it right now, and it's got Shang-Chi's in it, who I love, Simu Liu.
Yep.
Will Ferrell. Michael Cera's back. I love him. Kate McKinnon, America Ferrera, Alexandra Shipp. This has a pretty good cast. Issa Rae, Rhea Perlman. This has a really good cast. Chris Evans' brother's in it. So now Ryan Gosling has worked with both the Evans.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea what we're going to be watching in the Barbie universe.
I might go see Barbie now.
You know, it's funny, though. Like, I'm looking at it, and Ryan Gosling gets top billing over Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, and they turned Ryan Gosling or Ken into a fuckboy, which I think is pretty perfect for Ken. Yeah. And maybe perfect for Ryan Gosling. Maybe that's the role he's meant to play. But in terms of The Gray Man, as we wrap this up, is there anything you would have changed about it? Anything you would have added?
Like I said, I think that the action was good in spots, but the quick cuts, and the only reason I'm mentioning it, if it was anybody else, I wouldn't bother, but the Russos know better. They know how to pace a movie out and how to deliver on that and without, resorting to tropes and schlock. So it wasn't excessive, really, other movies, but it was noticeable that in some of it, there was a lot of unnecessary cuts and a lot of unnecessary camera flipping and all kinds of stuff. So I don't know. I that would have been it. Like I said, it's the only reason it's noticeable is when you say it's in a Russo brothers movie, then it's like, oh, that's weird that they would put that in there. But other than that, no, I think it was fun. I think if you read the books, he's a quiet guy. He doesn't say much anyway in the books, which I don't know if you read and you go, okay, we need somebody who's, you know, doesn't talk a lot, and then you say, I got a big budget, and they go, well, Ryan Gosling's your guy. You just need a guy to say 5 or 6 lines. So,
yeah, it was either Ryan or Keanu. You know, you could have went with both of them.
Keanu, but you know what? I know Keanu's busy, but the way that they describe him in the books, and this is, I think, from early 2000s, I think is the first book. They describe him to look like, maybe Keanu's a little too tall, but like that's how they describe him. He's not like muscular. He's unrecognizable as in any way. You would never notice him walk in or out of a room. So
what you're saying is, Gray Man 2, the person who hunts 6, is Danny DeVito.
I think you could only make any movie better by adding Danny DeVito.
I agree. Yeah. He has an adult coloring book now too. So if you're looking, I still
have that comic book where I have to give you where they.
Penguin.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it to you next weekend if I see you.
Yeah, we may see each other. The one thing I think I would have changed was the big title cuts.
Okay.
Where like the location scenes, because that is a very Russo thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like we saw that in Extraction. We saw that in Cherry.
Yep.
Obviously Civil War and the Winter Soldier. So I would have gotten rid of those to kind of separate it. But overall, in terms of like, if I'm going to rate this as a Netflix movie and as a movie in itself, this is one of the better things that I've watched this summer. So I'm going to give it a 4.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Definitely on Netflix. Netflix has taken a beating this year. And they haven't delivered as well as you'd hope they would have this year. But I think a 4 is good. I like the action. I think Chris Evans is kind of, well, he's obviously striking out in any direction he can to get out from under such a big shadow. And I think he's doing a great job doing it. You know? I don't know if he ever will, you know, but. You know, all these other, you know, memorable parts are he's going to be, you know, he's really, like you said, he's showing his range and what he could do. So,
yeah, I totally agree. Great cast, fun action.
Yeah.
And again, like you talked about last week, the way we look at movies is, did we enjoy it? Was it a fun experience? Yep. And this was a fun experience from my couch.
Yeah.
So 4s all around for The Gray Man. We should have went 6 just because that was Ryan Gosling's name, but we only go 1 to 5. But that's it. We're going to get out of here. Follow us on social media, the Galaxy Wars podcast. We'll be back next week. Here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.